Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with 11-year-old Kyan, a student author from our newest book, Dear Freedom Writer, and his parents, Dale and Manuel, whom Kyan affectionately calls Dr. Daddy and Teacher Daddy. To help celebrate Pride Month, we discuss the inspiration for Kyan's Dear Freedom Writer story, the righteous indignation Kyan uses to fuel his activism, and how this family is both allies and advocates for LGBTQIA+ families around the globe. This episode is incredibly insightful, and I hope that it will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. The Freedom Writers and I first met today's guest, Kyan, Manuel, and Dale in 2019, when Manuel attended our Teacher Training Institute. At the time, Kyan was only 8 years old, but we quickly saw how passionate he was about others and how important family was to him. During the pandemic, we got to talk with Kyan and his dads on our monthly Freedom Writer family calls and got to see Kyan grow from a bright-eyed 8-year-old into the young man he is today. So, when it came time to gather stories for our newest book, Dear Freedom Writer, the Freedom Writers and I knew that Kyan's story needed to be included in our new book. Although Kyan was the youngest student author, you would be hard-pressed to tell that he was only 10 years old when he penned his story because it is so beautifully written. In this podcast, with his father's help, Kyan takes us through his experiences as a chosen and wanted son to two loving and amazing fathers. It is important to note that in 2008, only a few years before Kyan was born, the state of California voted on what was called Proposition 8, which banned same-sex couples from getting married. Sadly, many of Manuel and Dale's neighbors publicly supported this discriminatory initiative, which later narrowly passed. Although marriage equality is now the law of the land in the United States, there are still areas where prejudice against LGBTQIA families still exist. As you will hear in today's episode, Kyan and his dads have experienced some of this bias in their own community, but remain committed to spreading love and showing their pride. Without further ado, here is my courageous conversation with Kyan, Manuel, and Dale. In the Freedom Writer world, we use the word family a lot. Our family is what we have chosen. Our family is what we've made. And we use the term ride or die. We are so fiercely loyal to this family of our making. Your family is a household of two fathers, two of the most noble, righteous, and incredible men I've ever met. And they wanted you, Kyan. This was a process to bring you into this world. So, Manuel and Dale, I'd love for you to talk about that because I think for so many kids that Freedom Writers have touched, they felt they weren't wanted or they felt rejected. And I feel with Kyan and that smile that is permanently on his face, I think a lot of that comes from him being chosen. And so can you both tell us about that origin story going back to with the birth mother?
Let's just start with, first of all, the name he chose for him. Kyan means the chosen one.
It also means long-awaited child, depending on what language you're looking into.
I love that. Chosen one and long-awaited child.
So we were involved in the open adoption process for quite some time and went with an agency that allowed for LGBTQI people to adopt, which was difficult for us to find an agency because a lot of the other agencies in California that I've actually professionally worked with won't adopt to LGBTQI individuals or families. So we went with our agency for that reason. And it was about probably 3 months after we finished our home study that we got a call from Kyan's birth mom. And at the time, she was 7 months pregnant. And then we drove up to San Francisco and met with her, and she made the decision to place Kyan with us.
Tell me about what kind of eureka moment that would be in this process of desperately wanting to bring a loving entity into this world, and this birth mother saying,
You are also chosen. You are also being selected.
It was a very emotional meeting. She and I both never met our birth fathers. And in that regard, we really understood each other. I mean, although we met for several hours, the decision was made within 5 minutes. And I think for both of us, prior to going into this process, we were worried about the adoption falling through. But once we met with Kyan's birth mom, we weren't so much worried about that.
Let's talk about that fear. For anyone that goes through the adoption process, there's probably that terror of, what if I'm not picked? What if they change their mind? And so I know with Freedom Riders, sometimes it's really scary if you have had any kind of rejection or any kind of abandonment in your life, you can build a wall so that you don't have that fragility of rejection. So Manuel, for you, I know through conversations in the past, there was a lot of fear of rejection and there was a lot of fear of possible discrimination or bigotry in this adoption process that you were scared of. So can you talk about that as well, that all of those fears and trepidations?
Sure. Prior to getting up together with our agency, we had actually tried the FOST adopt, but it didn't work out. We were in that process for a year. And after a year, our beautiful, loving social worker suggested maybe we look somewhere else.
For those that aren't from America, you're talking about doing foster care adoption, someone that's already in the system. Is that
right?
Correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The FOST adopt program differs from an open adoption, or the legal term is a directed adoption. So 24 hours after the birth of the child, it's finalized. Whereas with the FOST adopt program, any family member can step forward at any point, or the biological parent could address the issues that led their child becoming a dependent of the court. And there's no guarantees. But for us, going the open adoption route, the directed adoption felt the right way for us to go. And I mean, we were in the room when he was born. Unfortunately, his shoulder got caught coming out. Otherwise, the resident MD was going to let Manny catch him coming out.
Oh.
But we were there, and it was an amazing experience from the jump.
But before we get to the heaven that was Kyan's birth, we had 3 placements that fell through because family members had stepped in to take them away. And of course, we're not given a reason why, but we do know that they were aware that it was a two-dad household, and it's a very conservative part of California, Central California. So after a year of being matched and, you know, getting at the last minute pulled, it just was terrible, horrible to be expecting children on a Saturday and then finding out Friday night they're not coming. So after a year of that, our social worker, when it was time for us to re-up, she's all, I'm not telling you this, but I just want you to know you have other options. There are other agencies. And that night I researched, you know, LGBTQ adoption, and I got that matched with that agency. And we were in the first training that weekend to get matched with our little star.
I think kind of the word that stuck with me, Aaron, when you were talking earlier is chosen. And an open adoption, the terms of giving up a child is not used. It's a child is placed. And we are firm believers that God placed the 3 of us together for a reason.
I'm glad that you brought God into this, because sadly, sometimes people try to weaponize God in this loving equation of family of choice. And so I love that you are spiritual and you find this situation divine. What has it been like as someone who is in a loving relationship with someone of the same sex? Whenever you've heard religion villainizing the way you live your life, your authentic self, how does that make you feel as someone who is spiritual when someone tries to weaponize God?
It's difficult. We baptized Kyan in the Catholic Church, and we had to jump through a bunch of hoops. We have a friend that's a Catholic priest that was able to make it happen in the church, but the Catholic Church frowned upon it. And where we live, we have Mormon neighbors that they're very friendly with us, but they're the ones that had the yes on AIDS signs in their lawns, you know, 2 years before we had Kyan.
For our listeners who are not from California, can you describe what that initiative was and how it affected your circle and you personally.
So in 2008, there was a Proposition 8 that banned gay, lesbian, transgender individuals from not only having legal rights to marry and to have children if they wanted to go through adoption.
So if your next door neighbor is boasting Prop 8, what was that like coming home from the delivery room with this beautiful bundle of joy, this little redhead, and driving into a community that is going to see your child grow up?
We were very scared and we didn't know what that was going to look like. I mean, there's only so long you can keep your infant and toddler safe in your home, but we knew at some point he was going to have to enter the school district, interact with all of our neighbors that have these signs up with their children and their families.
You know, there's some words that I've been fixating on. You use the word less than, scared, and safe. And when I think of you, you are more than, you are larger than life. And I love referring to you as Dr. Dale White. But I can't even imagine taking the intellectual part of everything that you have done, but also the emotional, empathic part, saying, we've got to leave our beautiful, safe home and go out into the world. Initially, what was that like? Were you embraced? Did people make you feel more than, or did people actually make you feel less than?
It was mixed. I mean, there are people that were very embracing, but we've had some negative experiences. Manuel is Hispanic, Kyan and I are white. And so I remember one time going into a convenience store and the clerk making a comment to Kyan, where's your mother? Because pointing at Manuel, he has dirty skin. He can't be your child.
Oh my God. And people can't see my mouth hitting the floor. Oh my God. So Kyan, when you heard that, how old were you? And how did that register?
I think it was 4. I don't remember it very well.
Thank God. Thank God that you are malleable and you have amnesia of just blatant discrimination. Or has anyone ever said something that is just so blatantly wrong and discriminatory?
The most I've heard is like small comments, most of them slurs that I never really understood until now.
I remember when you were in kinder, first, second grade, a lot of your peers would say, which one's your real dad? He has to be your real dad. And why do you call that other guy your dad? And Kyan's terms for us, because I was on call so much when he was a baby, he called me Dr. Daddy and Manuel Teacher Daddy.
Oh, Dr. Daddy and Teacher Daddy. Clearly, we've known you for years. And I marvel that you decided in elementary school to be an author and share your story that is going to be in libraries and classrooms and universities. And so to be an author specifically about this journey, what made you decide the time is right and I'm going to be the storyteller?
I realized, like, with all the hate in the world, there has to be something that helps, even a tiny bit. So I realized that I could at least be a thing in that movement to help.
And in your story, what I love that you did is you said you used the word comeback earlier. You're great with comebacks, but you wanted to do something very specific. Your parents have taught you to be an activist for causes like Black Lives Matter, for the environment. And you went to your parents and said, I want to go to a pride parade in the month of June. And I want to fly a flag. I want to fly a pride flag. Tell me about what that was like when you went to your parents who are activists and you declared that you wanted to go to parade, not them asking you to go.
At the time, I didn't really realize what I was doing. I was just asking to go somewhere that I felt would be important for me to go to. I didn't really understand the mass of that, but it did feel pretty good asking, and yeah.
I think a lot of it also had to do with the pandemic and being locked up. And then he had a lot more access to the internet and, you know, whatnot, the classes being online and stuff. And so he did come across a lot of pride stuff the first year that we were in lockdown. And, you know, of course he had seen stuff, but we never really talked about it. Dale and I had decided early on that we weren't going to take him to parades because that was kind of like our thing. and not really to impose it on him per se, but we always said if he wanted to, that we would go, we would take him. And so 2 years ago, when he brought that up, I said exactly that. Well, Daddy and I are going to let you decide. So whenever you're ready, just let us know. And he said, well, I'm ready. And that's where it kind of took off from there. I mean, he really started to educate himself on the gay pride movement and the, you know, the discrimination, the verbiage that we should not use. And in a lot of ways, you know, this new generation is really going to change the world. And him schooling us on what's the proper thing to say nowadays and not to say has been really an eye-opening experience.
And tomorrow is the Fresno Gay Pride Parade, and I think we're planning on going. But it's also 25 years ago tomorrow, Manny and I met at the Gay Pride Parade.
Let's go back. So 25 years ago, before Kyan was a thought, it was a very different world. So can you go back 25 years and shed some light on how things have evolved and changed? And are they better or different now?
Before we go on to like how things have changed, in a lot of ways, we've been so busy parenting for the last 11 years that maybe we haven't really had a chance to like discuss some of the things. I'll have to say that for me, it's almost like all of my fears disappeared when Kyan was born, because I realized that although we may be homophobic in our own way and without realizing it until you realize it, I did not want our son to have those same feelings of shame and guilt and not belonging at all. And so I really had to work really hard on myself, we both did, to not instill that in him. And I think to a certain extent, we've done a pretty good job of that. You know, when he pulled our covers 2 years ago and said, why don't we have a flag in front of our house? Part of it was because we just don't do that, you know. But another part of it that Dale and I took a really good look at is, why not? Why don't we? Why haven't we ever even thought about it? And so in a lot of ways, these last 2 years with kind of becoming such an activist, it's really been kind of a coming out process again. You know, it's kind of silly for us to think that we're going to get away with it. But when it's two men going out with a baby, we are revolutionary. You know, we are making a statement. We are letting the world know that we're here and we are a family and he's our son. And we're both very good at not necessarily being rude or correcting people, but both of us, Dale and I, have always been really good at helping people see a different way.
And it's more subtle. It's not in your face. It's just demonstrating and integrating with our community to show that we're a family just like everyone else, and our fears and our aspirations and our desires for our kids and our struggles with our kids are all the same.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, unique, because we are two dads.
Right.
You know, we do recognize that, of course, that it is unique. When, you know, I remember showing up to the Mommy and Me groups when Kyan was a baby, which I always got side-eyed, but I still went. And I still kept my head up because our son had a right to be there like everybody else.
And his father had a right to be there like everyone else.
Right.
Manuel, I love that you are so proud of your Latino roots. And I love that you use the word revolutionary. So how kismet was it that you, as a proud Latino, were able to introduce your son to Dolores Huerta, one of the most revolutionary Latinas on the planet, at his first gay pride parade? For you to explain to those that are not from America this figurehead and how dear she is to so many of us. But for you to have that exposure and that ability to introduce your son, what was that like as a father?
Well, I got to tell you, it was pretty spectacular. When I was in college, I had a chance to meet Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. But Dolores Huerta always spoke to my soul. And of course, the more that I've researched and studied about her, the more impressed I have been with her. We had our first flag-raising ceremony in Fresno, and I was surprised to see her sitting there. But also not surprised, because of course there she was. You know, of course she was there to support and lend a hand and a voice. And we couldn't wait for us to introduce her to Kyan and for him to meet her. And even though he didn't really know too much about her at the time, he sure knows about her now.
The LGBTQI flag was raised at City Hall, and there was a lot of controversy in our community. and amongst the politicians, amongst the community, and they wanted it taken down. And we won that fight, but there was a really special day.
So, Kyan, your dad just said something really beautiful, spoke to my soul. And for people around the world, Dolores Huerta coined the phrase, si se puede. What does si se puede mean to you?
It means like demand for change.
Ooh, I love that. Demand. That's such a great action verb. And you are going to be the generation that demands for change. So what is your demand for change?
My demand for change is acceptance. No matter who someone is, another race, sexuality, whatever, they should be accepted.
You know, kind of what I love about where you are at 11, our society is not there yet. For a long time, we used to use the word tolerance, and it wasn't enough. Tolerance is not enough. So I love that you led with the word acceptance. For an 11-year-old who's demanding change, talk about what acceptance looks like in a store, in a classroom, at a parade, or with a flag.
So, like in a convenience store, you would be treated as a normal human being in a normal standpoint, as a normal customer. You would just treat them like a normal person.
And when you hear the word normal, what does that mean? Because I think that Freedom Riders and I always feel that we're outside of normal. We want to create our own norms. But what does normal mean for you?
Normal would just be any citizen. Any citizen would technically be normal. So any person from pretty much any country, it would be normal.
So all those big words, equity and inclusion and treating everybody the same.
You know, Eric, I really like the fact that you are reminding us, Dale and I, that we come from the generation of tolerance. Absolutely. And we're beyond that now. And acceptance is a much different feeling. I just want to read something from Kyan's short story that...
Oh, please do.
I loved so much that he said here. We were asked to stand on the stage. I finally felt important enough as a family to be included in a historic event in our hometown. And that, of course, is the flag raising that Dale was talking about. We did deliver a copy of the book, signed copy of the book, to our mayor to let him know what an impact that had on us and to please invite us if they had it again. We also delivered a copy to the council member that actually was the person that spearheaded that. As everywhere in the world, there's a lot of controversy with our politicians in our town right now. We didn't hear from anybody, but we still have faith and we still have hope and we're still passing our books around to anybody that will listen, really.
Emmanuel, when you hear your son say, finally, important enough, that's revolutionary. Tell me what that means for you as a father to know that your son's words are immortalized, finally important enough. What does that feel like?
Well, I remember the first time that I read that, and even now I'm getting choked up because, you know, as a parent, that's exactly what you don't want your children to feel like they are not part of something. And on the one hand, I've had personal friends tell me, what's the big deal if you don't go to the muffins in the morning with mom event? You know, what's the big deal if you don't go to the mom and son dance? Although we've always told him it's his choice. He can bring his godmother, he can bring Dale, he can bring us both. And so far to date, he always wants us both present whenever there's that kind of event.
Coincidentally, we did push back on his school district and they've changed it to pastries with parents and the parent dance.
You know, I'm a sucker for alliteration, but I'm so glad because as you were listing things, Manuel, I was feeling excluded on your behalf. And so I love that you guys were progressive enough to say, let's make it pastries for parents. So Kyan, you didn't remember some of the mean things people said to you as a child. I'm sure you weren't even aware as an infant that there was a part of society that already excluded your dad's. So hearing about that now, how does that make you feel that your father's fought for inclusion for not just you, but for every kid?
Extremely happy that my caregivers would push back on something to make it more inclusionary to kids like me.
I don't know if kind of remember this, but the first event that he invited us to, the muffins in the morning with mom or whatever, he had a friend who didn't have a dad. And when her time for the daughter dance came up, Kayan was livid. And I remember encouraging her mom to go because we had already gone with him to the mother and son dance. So encouraging her mom, hey, just go with her. You're her parent. You're her caregiver. You can go. And she just couldn't bring herself to cross that threshold. And she ended up sitting in the parking lot just weeping. And that's really when I understood the inequities of having things like that.
And Manuel, I mean, I'm very proud of him. He's also on the PTA for the past few years and has involved himself in making equity and inclusion and acceptance prominent values where we live.
And Manuel, you know, Kaim's got a daddy who's a doctor and a daddy who's a teacher. As a teacher, I love that you have often been the student of your son. That there's the duality of your roles. You teach Kayan, and then Kayan teaches you. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that your son, the activist, has taught you about being proud and out and being proud and open?
I think that the first time that he challenged me 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, I'm like, why not? That was his big thing. What's the big deal? And at that time, Dale and I were like, well, gosh, what does that mean? And what does that mean for us? And what is it, you know, what is he trying to tell us? But now, 2 years later, I understand him and his generation. And I love the fact that they're saying love is love. And at the end of the day, for their generation or maybe that generation after, it really will be like, gosh, I can't even believe there was a time when we would side-eye two dads walking down the aisle. And I think that's what I've learned from Kayan the most, is to just look at our lives and even look at myself with a fresh pair of eyes. And I got to tell you, it is really a freeing experience to see myself through my son's eyes than it is to see myself through my 50-plus year eyes with the Catholic Church goggles on and, you know, and everything else. You know, all the baggage that goes with that.
You know what I'm so excited about, as gentlemen you will understand, is Kayan is going to be in locker rooms, those middle school and high school locker rooms where there's a lot of divisive bullying. And what I'm excited about, Kayan, is you're going to hear words that are really uncomfortable. And a lot of kids in those locker rooms are going to giggle. And you're going to be the kid that stands up. And I'm so excited about that. So when you go off to middle school and you go off to high school and there are locker rooms and you hear people your age, people your gender, saying really horrific things, what are the things that you think you're going to say in anticipation of that?
I'd probably tell them to shut up first and whatever the heck they're doing.
What are some of your comebacks now?
What do you think the ones that are too crazy?
You know, Aaron, I'll jump in here while he's thinking. This is another thing he probably won't remember either, but I remember the first time that I faced discrimination as a parent in a very subtle way when I picked him up at daycare, and we just loved his daycare. And I got to tell you, we have been really blessed with our teachers and our schools that he's gone to.
Absolutely.
And they have all been allies. I don't think we've ever had one teacher that wasn't on our side, basically. But as I'm walking out with Kayan, a kid in the group that was left behind said, "You have two dads?" And watching Kayan stand up like a peacock, you know, and turn around and say, "Yeah, I do. So what?" And he was probably 3 years old maybe at that time. And I realized at that moment that our fight wasn't going to be his fight. We were going to talk to him about what it meant to be our family and how we love each other and how we stand up for each other. But once again, even at three, he was showing me that my fight was his fight. You know, and that's actually one of the things that started with his story, you know, was that I told him, this is not your fight. And then his comeback to me was, I have two dads. Of course it's my fight. I mean, he was 9 maybe when he said that. And I was flabbergasted, and I was like, I was just saying, like, what the heck did this kid just blow my mind, you know?
I think that kind of blew all the Freedom Writers' minds. When we gathered for the book launch at the end of March, I think unanimously. We just nominated Kyan on the presidential ticket when he turns 35. But I think when you hear a kid say, yeah, so what? It doesn't come from a place of cockiness. It's just pure confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a confidence that you have, Kyan, that we adults, through osmosis, we want to get a little of your confidence. So where do you think this inner strength and inner confidence comes from?
Probably from my parents, mainly. From the hell they've taught me to not really care what other people think. And they can have their own opinions, but that doesn't mean they have to bring you down.
I love that. And when you hear your dads talk about, Manuel talked about the side eye. Dr. Dale talked about the comments in the store. You weren't at an age where you were confident enough to even understand it when those things happened. But I'm very confident in your confidence that if you saw side eye today, or you heard someone mutter something under their breath today, that a very confident 11-year-old would probably confront them. Is that true?
I would probably try to show them that what they're trying to do is stupid and they should stop. And if they don't want to listen, then I'm going to leave.
So, Kyan, there's a statistic that your fathers might have shared with you that sadly, in families that don't have the open communication like yours, that if a young person feels less than by a church or a family member or somebody at school giving them the side eye, that the largest suicide rate often is within the LGBTQ community of teenagers. So I love that your fathers are on the forefront of creating courageous conversations for people to not take that route. How does that make you feel that your dads save lives, not only for their son, but for others?
So personally, it's honoring that my parents are helping people almost every day.
Do you think that's influenced you and you being active and
probably
contributing and being part of this movement?
Definitely.
Do you remember the time that one of your peers said that you didn't have a mom?
Oh, yeah. One of my old friends said that, I can't go to the dance because you don't have a mom.
So talk about that for other young people. How could others learn from you to not allow bullies to have a platform?
So first, confront them, but don't, come back at them and start doing the exact same thing to them, because that's showing them that it's okay to do that to other people because you're doing it to them so they can do it to anyone else. That will not help anyone in the situation. Also, if you see something, report it or talk to the person. Don't just turn a blind eye. Oh, I didn't see it.
Let's talk about some positive things for this generation that is coming forward. How can you help be an ambassador for positive things such as inclusion and acceptance that maybe your fathers and myself didn't have examples of when we were kids?
People can't pick their family or their race, sexuality, gender. You can't really pick that. So it's idiotic to hate someone for it.
So I want to start with you, Dale, and then I'll go to Manuel and then Kyan. What are you going to do differently now that you've got in your hand a best-selling book by your son, telling his truth? How can you do it differently in the world of academia and with society?
Literally sharing our story. It's published. I've shared it with colleagues. We've shared it with all of our family members. And there's stuff, hearing it from Kyan's narrative has been more elucidating, I think, for a lot of people versus just hearing it from us.
Yeah. How about you, teacher daddy, Manuel? How are you going to do it differently?
Well, I think that we had talked about the other student that I had involved with the program and realizing that I hadn't been as available as I feel like I should have been. And certainly one of the things that I'm going to do different is to represent and to not edit and deny my family and my life. I had always been hesitant because of the school I work at is just, a little bit different. But at the same time, kids are kids. And that's exactly how I'm seeing it. And when they ask me about the shield that we made at the Institute, I talk about it. And I talk about my son and I talk about our family. And the kids get it. They don't ask questions, But at least now I'm talking about it. Whereas before I would immediately say, we're not talking about that. Let's go to chapter two. You know, and now I feel like I've been more open. Certainly at Kai in school, I feel like in the last 2 years, especially since I joined the PTO, that I've made a point to represent and to talk about my husband and to talk about, you know, our issues with parenting and the morning thing and all that business. And I don't know if it's because of that, but in this last year, we've had more LGBTQI parents join the PTO. And I always make it a point to represent with my bracelet or to wear a t-shirt or to wear something where there is like no guessing on their part and making myself available to them.
I love that for our audience, Manuel's proudly wearing a rainbow bracelet. I love that. I want to know, Kine, is there something that you would like the audience to have as a takeaway that you wrote and only you could say it best?
It's in the beginning. Yes, I have two dads. They are gay. I don't get why anyone would have an issue with that.
And so maybe that's our moonshot moment. Let's evolve as a society where people don't have issue with it.
I wanted to just add that when Prop 8 happened in 2008, that was 2 years before Kyan was born. We knew it was on the horizon, but honestly, we thought it would never, ever come to pass. And even in my heart, thought to myself, we should go down to City Hall right now, tonight, and get married. But we didn't. So it did pass. We were very, very shocked. But the really hard part for us though, in our neighborhood, and this is before we even were looking at becoming parents, was coming around the corner in our little HOA and seeing virtually every house with the yes on 8 sign. Like, it really made us pause. How could we possibly think about growing our family in this neighborhood? So we had to make peace with that, you know. And I think that was part of our shell shock. Even after Kyan was born, we weren't really socializing with the neighbors. But once he was born and he needed outside air and stroller walks and whatnot, you bet we went out there and held our heads high and we talked to the neighbors. And sure, some neighbors to this day still turn away when we come into the street. But you know what? That's not our problem. That's their problem. And we have each other at the time. We made friends since, especially since Kyan started school. And we completely know who our allies are. And, you know, we're not going to worry about the haters as much as we used to. And like I said before, because of Kyan, I'm not going to show my fear in front of him. I'm going to show my fight in front of him so that he knows that we have his back and that he knows how to stand up for himself when the time comes.
In the state of Florida, they have a new law, the Don't Say Gay law. So it is probably safe to assume that your story in Dear Freedom Writer is not going to be able to easily be read in a classroom because teachers have been told not to talk about sexuality in a classroom. As an author, how does it make you feel that your story is going to be excluded in the state of Florida?
Upsetting, not just because my story is not there, but many others about similar or the same topic. And it's deeply upsetting that a government feels like they have to ban that, or even that they can ban that.
It's not just Florida. I mean,
sure.
Since the symposium in March, I've become very close to Tara, who is Teacher of the Year in Texas. And they want to like rescind that award since they are now focusing on not allowing gay and lesbian terminology or identification to be had in Texas.
It's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. And we're glad that our son has the confidence and the wherewithal to keep his head up and not necessarily agree with us, but to realize the craziness that's happening right now. But not just getting stuck there, not just being angry, you know, but figuring out how can we change it? How can we not let this happen again?
How are we going to do this different?
I'm really, really upset about the fact that it even came up. And the fact that it keeps gaining traction is what's really upsetting to me because this is one of the greatest countries in the world. It can be. Certainly, we have seen it closer to great than not. But nowadays, it just seems like we're going backwards. And when you hear people idealizing like the 1950s, you know, when everything made sense, and it's like, are you kidding me? you know, women were in the kitchen and there was this idealized vision of what a family life was, which was absolutely not. I don't know anybody that has had, you know, the perfect Brady Bunch family, but we certainly idealize that and we certainly want to recreate it. But, you know, it just was never that way. And it isn't that way now.
Well, our activist, Kyan, when I say things differently, I feel like you've been doing it right from the get-go. Like, you don't have to change anything. I feel like you have to change some of us old folks. So if you were to wish or hope or poke and prod an older person to do things differently, what can we as a society do different since you're already doing it right?
First, like, include others. Don't exclude from terms and stuff. Also, don't be openly discriminatory to a specific race, gender, whatever. And try to be inclusionary. Do something to make them feel like they're accepted and not an outcast. Treat people with respect and openly fight others who decide not to.
I'm so grateful for our student author, Kyan, and his loving parents, Manuel and Dale, for sharing with us the beauty of family and the power of love. My dear listeners, may we create compassionate communities that accept everyone. May we honor all families, whether they be families by birth or by choice. And in honor of today's guest, may we all be catalysts for change in our own communities. Speaking of being catalysts for change in our own communities, it's worth noting that Kyan, Manuel, and Dale were considered dignitaries at Fresno's recent Pride event following our interview. The mayor and city council members invited the three of them to the Pride event, where they were honored with the task of raising the Pride flag at Fresno City Hall after Kyan read poignant paragraphs from his own entry in Dear Freedom Rider. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and thank you for being part of the Freedom Rider family. If you'd like to learn more about our new book, Dear Freedom Rider, Stories of Hardship and Hope from the Next Generation, please go to the episode description in your podcast app and click on the links in our show notes. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Gruwell. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.